Okay, we're recording now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, March 4th, 2026, and this is a collective bargaining session with the UCF chapter of the United Faculty of Florida and the team representing the UCF Board of Trustees. I'm going to do something a little bit unusual before we start. I have to tell you a story. I was walking across campus. Actually, Todd, I was going over to take pictures for you of a parking garage, and I was coming back, and I'm about to cross the street, and a woman passed by, and she said, "Oh, that's what you look like when you're not on camera." And
did she say you look better? Or?
Well, there's only so much you can do, Talat. So, you know, I don't know. She did not, but she said, as I'm walking away, she says, I'll see you later. And it dawned on me what she was telling me, that she's a bargaining unit member and she sees me on screen. So I don't know who this woman was, but I just want to be on the record sincerely apologizing that I did not stop and make sure that I met her personally. So okay. I regret that, and I'm sorry about that, and I hope I run into her again. And
we have somebody said that was right. Somebody. Yeah, that somebody. Sorry. Yeah, the person is here.
Jory Bright.
Okay. All right. Thank okay. you, Jory.
Jory. Okay.
Thank you very much for letting me know who you are. I appreciate that. Okay, so we can get on with our real business at hand. The first thing that we'll do this afternoon is take a look at the minutes that we have from February 11th. I think Charlie's got those ready to go.
Yeah, looks okay to me.
Okay, any comments about these minutes?
Looks okay to me.
Okay, well, hearing that and nothing else, I will assume that those minutes are good to go. And the next thing, a lot that I mentioned that we want to do today is provide a response to the UFF, a response to the proposal we got last time for Article 23. And I've actually kind of prepared some notes for myself, so I'm going to read through these and just ask you to bear with me as I do that. The bottom line is, you know, we don't have anything that we could offer in addition to what we've got, but I just ask for your patience with me as I read through this. It was last week the UFF and its leader provided a public comment during a Board of Trustees meeting. The message to the board and the public seemed to be that the university ought to reallocate recurring funding in the university's budget to facilitate a salary increase for the faculty. A conclusion shared by meeting attendees is that UFF was advocating that some UCF employees be terminated so that faculty salaries can be increased. It's important to keep in mind that a very substantial portion of UCF's E&G funds are spent on salaries. The total amount of salaries varies from unit to unit, but the overall portion committed to salaries is about 94%. Reallocations of funding must necessarily affect UCF's people. The public comment to the BOT began with something along the lines of, we are all on the same side, and we agree with that. But this opening statement doesn't really fit with a suggestion to reallocate funding if some of the people on the common side thereby become expendable. It's really because of the collective efforts of UCF's employees, including many who are not faculty, UCF is expected to be officially recognized as a preeminent institution in a few months. On a number of occasions since September 2025, President Cartwright has stated that UCF employees would benefit from recurring preeminence funding that UCF could receive for fiscal year 2027. Provost Buckwalter has consistently expressed the same intention to reward employees for contributing to UCF's achieving preeminence status. Nothing is certain at this point, and we are still nearly 4 months from the finalization of our state's 2027 budget. And UCF is not in a position to commit funds now that it does not have. I also want to correct the record about salary increases over the last 5 years. Faculty at UCF received no increases in two, not three, of the last 5 years. That is, there were no increases offered in 2023-24 and this year, 2025-26. The increases over the 5 years from 2021-22 through 2025-26 totaled at least 8.5%, depending upon an employee's salary level. In addition to the three increases over the last 5 years, five one-time payments were paid out. There was no one-time payment in 2023-24, and there were two in 2021-22. And depending upon the salary level, those one-time payments totaled between $10,250 and $15,250. UCF wishes that more and larger increases could have been implemented over the last 5 years and that an increase could be offered this fiscal year. We are where we are, and UCF is not able to commit funds now that it doesn't have. The university remains committed to its employees, including the faculty. As part of that commitment to its employees, the university must remain fiscally responsible as stewards of the public's money and trust. New, unrestricted, and recurring funding for preeminence is what we all would like to see and need to see. As we gathered this afternoon, we've reached a critical time in our negotiations for 2025-26. We have agreed on new versions of Articles 8, 19, 20, and 32, as well as on an MOU to pilot internal advisory panels for Step 2 grievances. It would be unfortunate if we did not come to agreement on Article 23 for 2025-26 today. In UFF employees would not receive an admittedly small one-time payment this fiscal year, and there would not yet be an option to convene an internal advisory panel during Step 2 grievance process. Whether both sides reach agreement on Article 23 for 2025-26 or not, Article 23 is open for negotiation already for the next fiscal year. Agreement by UFF to the Article 23 proposal offered by UCF is not an indication of UFF's satisfaction with the one-time payment that has been offered. The university hopes that unrestricted and recurring funds for preeminence are provided to UCF for 2026-27. An agreement on Article 23 can be reached in the summer so that an increase can be implemented in fall 2026, and the earlier, the better. But that's where we are.
Okay, Chuck, so I do want to respond to each of the points that you raised, because it was, it was a collective effort, but I was the spokesperson for the public comment. And so the number one, when in the public comment that funds that the university find ways to look into its budget and find ways to provide faculty or employees at UCF, all employees, I would say, a raise was not based on something, that hasn't been done at other places. At none of the universities which have found ways to reward their faculty with salary raises, they have done so by laying off people. None of them. What they did is they looked at their budget and they looked at what were some ways in which their recurring funds could be reallocated, could be put in a non-recurring, and salary raises be given. So the 11 universities I'm talking about, actually 10 universities that I'm talking about, none of them laid off anyone. So I am amazed that UCF administrators cannot, you know, address this issue without thinking about layoffs. Layoffs would be the last thing that those of us from UFF will advocate. That is not what is to be done. Yeah, I mean, you know, there are ways in which you can find money. There are, of course, you know, one, and that also we're not going to advocate is hiring freeze. We're not advocating that. We're saying, talk to other university administrators and find how they found a way. I told you at UF, it was found by their board of trustees. At FIU, they sat down together and with the budget, which was something that we haven't been able to do, with the budget to see, yes, where is their room? And they were able to find 1.5% raise. So all of these institutions, which I think we consider our peers, somehow they're able to do that. I also have record, and I think, you know, I can show you right here if I may show. So before I do that, actually, I do want to show a few things. So I will have to share my screen. And so let me share my screen here. And this is what I have here is something that I basically went to the website, which is controlled by UCF, and we basically tabulated this chart here, okay? So this is from 2015, 16, 17, 18, all the way up to 2025. And it tells you what raises were given. Here is the raise in 2015, here it is in 16, here's 2017 here. Okay, that was zero there. Okay, it goes on. Then 2020, that's what I'm talking about. This is here. If you like, I can color that in red. That is in red there. That is the one that is there. And those are the 2 years. And if we do not get anything, then this will be the third year in this span here that we would get zero. So it is nothing. It was not out of my head that I came up with the number. Is from the table here. And I specifically said, from 2020 to 2025, if we do not get a raise, this would be the third time that we haven't got it. So I will send this to you. You can check it out. I got it basically from your website. So that's one. And I'll stop sharing this document and I will definitely send that to you. So then I hope you will agree that if you give us raise this year, then you will be right. We would be only two in the last 5 years. And if not, then what I said there, that it would be the third time if we were to get it. I would also like to show you, and I think I've done this again, so maybe I will again, you've given me this opportunity here. So to share this. So this is the screen here. And if you see, this is from one of the universities that we like to think of them as our peers, FSU, okay? In a lot of ways we are, but this is the red is what you see, that those are the raises they've got. There's no zero there. There's no zero there, okay? This is from 2012 to 2023. And I can give you the numbers from 2023 to now. And in fact, the raises have only been higher than what has been shown here. So I can have a similar plot for UF. I can have one for FIU. I mean, you know, take any one of these. So I have sent this to you. I'll send it again. But the point I want to make is that there are other institutions in the same state university system that are able to find their road. And this black is what they were offered. They offered was the first offer. So it's not like they come to the bargaining you know, table and come with an offer of a raise. No, it gets bargained. And when it gets bargained, this is what happens. So they also, their BOTs also make a very either make a 0% raise or hardly any raise, but then eventually raises are given. And if raises are given, then over 10-year period, there is a substantial raise. But what I'm saying is that UCF doesn't do what these other institutions do. So that's one thing. I'm going to stop sharing that. And I will show, I think, okay, so there was, I think I've shown you this, maybe I'll do this again. And this is, I think you have this document, but and this is the document from UWF, which gives a more detailed analysis of what they have done. This is all the way going down, you know, and I'll send it again, because I want everyone who's listening here and to look at what they have gotten. And again, this is another institution. I gave FSU, which is on one side, UWF, which is a smaller institution in some ways. And there again, you know, it goes on. There's a one time and a salary increase. They seem to always be doing the one time and the salary as more or less the same. But if you look at it, 2014, again, 2015, 1.9, 1.3, then goes on here, 5% somewhere, again, 5% bonus, and, you know, and so on. And, you know, and I know that I don't want to be taking up all the time doing this, but I did want to share one more item with you, which is this. And this is, so that will be one more. Since you did want to bring up the points that I had raised, let me just show you this. So this is FSU and UWF. And this is, again, salary. This is February 24th. They are talking about salary for 26-27. So our problem is not only do we not get a raise this year, and, you know, last year, if you remember, it was a hard fight. Initially, the provost then had come and said there would be no raise. And then eventually we were able to get something. But initial offer was zero because they said they had spent the money on academic advisors. So here we have for 26-27, they are proposing, this is their BOT, 2.5% merit raise to salary, base salary, and 2.5% one-time bonus. That's how they do it. And so this is where you're looking at it here, okay? So again, 22-23, 3%, 2.9 in 23-24, 4 in 24-25, 4 to 3 in 25-26, and now 2.5. And so, you know, they are all able to somehow find the money. And again, none of them are getting millions from the legislature. I mean, legislature is giving, treating, as far as I can see, maybe a little bit more and a little bit less here, but they're not treating any particular university in any different way. So it becomes very difficult for those of us here to really buy the argument that you really, you know, are looking into giving salary raises to faculty. So I think that is really the point. And I wanted to be made very clear that we never thought, when we were saying, please go and take a look at your budget and find ways, it never even crossed our mind that we're asking for layoffs. We are not asking for layoffs, okay? I think what we're saying is, be creative, find ways, like other people, talk to them, maybe they'll help you. Or talk to us, maybe we can help you. And that's what we're talking about here, you know? The thing is, the lack of transparency also is a big problem. And I hope you go and talk to the new provost, because he has said several times that he wants things to be transparent. So I hope that you would go and ask that we would like more transparency. We would like to know where funds are going. And we would like to know where faculty salary raise fit in the new budget model that he's proposing. Is it a line item that's on top before funds are sent to colleges, that this is an item that is going to be taken seriously and some accommodation made. So that's one thing that we would like to ask. We also, when you say that there's no money, we don't understand why auxiliary funds. Maybe you have a reason, and again, you can tell us that would make it clear. Apparently there are $20 million of auxiliary funds that are sitting there, out of which $10 million is for athletics. There is then apparently another $10 million. And again, to me, all of this is rumor, because nobody has come and said, hey, you know, let's sit down and I'll tell you what it is. You know, in fact, if you did sit down, if the provost were to sit down with us, and it could be just he and I could sit down, or a whole group of us could sit down and say, look, this is the situation. Okay, where do you think we can find the money for? It could be, because we are all rational people, that we looked at all of that and we said, okay, John, you're right. Maybe this time you don't, but let's see what you can do next time. Because what would you do if there are no extra, no new recurring funds being sent? Are you going to tell us again that there is no money? When we were talking, and I would actually, I don't know if you want me to show it, what Rebecca showed us, she gave us the answers. That was, I was very grateful to her that she answered all our questions. And I would like that to be public record, so that can be put on the website. So I can show it here, or I can just, I can show it so that that becomes part of the, of the documents. But you know, basically the answer that was given, that all funds have been committed by the former provost. Well, of course, you know, he couldn't have made that decision unilaterally, but regardless, but that means that if they were committed, then you know, what kind of is it for things that cannot be, you know, reallocated? It would be good to know. Maybe it can't be reallocated, in which case it would be, we would like to know what were those funds, where did they go? That's fine. I mean, you know, it's neither your money nor my money or the provost's money, right? It is, you know, the state's money. So let's talk about where it is going. And okay, we can understand that. Then we would ask the question, if these were your priorities then, what are your priorities now? And then there are, and you know, I was even mentioning some trivial things like looking at recurring expenses like electricity. Is electricity being wasted? If it is being wasted, maybe some millions can be saved from that. You know, that could be something. The other is when people leave, a lot, you know, we lost a lot of faculty, and most of the faculty if they're senior people, they're obviously leaving at a higher salary than junior people who are coming in. So there's something to be said there. We also are hearing now that the fringe benefits, which are now 32%, are going to be 29%. Well, if that is going to be the case, you've got 3% over there. Will that be used for salary raises? You know, that is something to look into. So, you know, I think the problem is that you know, we are not sitting down, and basically that we are equal partners here, that we need to then know why we are not getting any raises. You know, we do see ADIs being given. We do see higher administrators being given raises. So then the question is, why? Particularly why those of us who know don't make 100,000 a year, who make maybe 60,000 a year. Hopefully there's nobody anymore who makes less than 50,000. Okay, that I hear that with ADIs that has been remedied, and if that is the case, then that is a very good start. But you know, that's the kind of question that we're asking. Why is it that none of it, that they, you know, if you're talking about ADIs and you're using them to for some people, why not do something else with that? You know, or you're going to tell me that those are also not available, or only available when you have your discretion. Of course, ADI is for, you know, the discretion that lies with you. But then the question is, where do we, the entire faculty here, where do they fit in that discretion? So I think, you know, those are some things that basically you know, that boggles our mind. And so again, just to summarize, I think I hope I made it very clear what our intention was in that public statement. It was not layoffs. It was basically restructuring the way the budget is and finding ways, just like other universities have found, to give us raises. If they can do it, you can do it. And then the next question is you know, where do we go from here? And I have a set of questions which I can send, or you can take, you know, down, which is for the provost, which is, you know, one question would be that what effort has the provost made to investigate where in the budget funds could be freed up for faculty raises? You told us that the answer is no, but what efforts were made? Where did they look to see, or was it always so clear that no, nothing could be found? Okay, that's one thing. So what efforts were made? And then the
if you've got a set of questions that you would like us to relay to the provost, I would rather get them in writing.
Okay.
So that I don't transcribe them wrong.
I have a list of questions. There are about four questions. We can send it to you. I don't even have to say it right now, but I will certainly give it to you in writing. And these are all basically about the budget and how, you know, and some questions about what happens if there are no recurring funds coming, and then what happens if recurring funds are coming. So what kind of percentage raises is he thinking of? So it's of course, you know, you don't know the budget and I don't know the budget. So yeah. So I think I'll stop at that.
Thank you for.
But I'll send comments. You all the documents that I shared.
Okay.
Should I show the one that Rebecca sent us so that it becomes a public document?
I suppose you can.
Or should I just send it to you and you can?
Well, I got it. I'm the one that sent it to you.
No, I know, but it would be.
Everything you display, you need to send me a copy of after the meeting so I can put it on the website. Okay.
Okay. Good. So why don't I do that? And so in that sense, you know, what Rebecca sent us was also, and that can be included without my showing it to you, right, Charlie?
I'm just saying that anything you display during the meeting, I need to show was displayed during the meeting. If you don't display it then.
Okay. I see. I get you. I got the idea. Okay. All right. Good. Okay. So I think maybe just to keep everything straight, why don't I just share this, because that way everyone has it. And this is, can you see my screen? No, you can't, because I didn't play. Yeah. So this is basically, these were the four several questions that we had given. And here are the answers that Rebecca provided. The questions basically had to do with in the increase in the recurring funds from between 2022 and 2025. And then similarly, we wanted to know about the ENG and about what happens to performance funding. How did that increase? Then what about tuition? Then the overall increase in ENG revenue stream over the last 3 years. And then what is the increase in salary and benefits? So that was what we were talking about here. So I think that's the document. And then I'll send you that document as well. So I'll stop sharing. Okay. All right.
Okay. Thank you again, Talat. I've got a couple of things that I'll say. I know that I've seen all the documents that you shared this afternoon, but the summary that you had of our salary increases, at least for the last few years, is correct. I agree with that. And you have those numbers represented correctly. And what I'm trying to suggest to Lot is, I understand that we have some work to do before we come to agreement on Article 23 for 26-27. No question about it. And, you know, we'll work with you and try to get some of those answers. Can we answer everything right now? No, we can't. We don't really know what the budget for 26-27 is going to be yet. My point today is the university would like to make a one-time payment to the faculty for this year. We're not saying it's great. We're not saying it's large, but we'd like to say it's yours. is what we'd like to say. And if we don't come to agreement, we're at a point on the calendar where I think we lose that opportunity. And it would also delay implementing the other articles that we've agreed on during this particular year. So we are not trying to suggest, let's just sign off on Article 23 and everything's wonderful, you know, everybody's happy. We are not saying that at all. What we're saying is we would like to have our faculty get the one-time payment that every other employee has already gotten. That's what we would like to do. And we understand that we've got some work to do with you and talking about the budget. And I know Rebecca was very helpful when we met with her. She's a great resource. You know, we can probably impose on her again and try to get some of these answers. But it's not like we're going to get these answers to all these questions tomorrow, and you know, we're going to be able to still make the one-time payment on May 15th. That's our goal, and we told you that in January. We wanted to make sure that we were able to do something for our faculty, and that remains the case. And we understand that for 26-27, you know, we've got some work ahead of us. And I'm suggesting to you that we will not have a proposal for 23 for 26-27 until July at the earliest. That's when we know what the budget looks like. But where we are now, and we're at a point in this fiscal year where we can't do any reallocation. Things are committed for this year. What we're trying to do, one of the commitments that the university would like to make is a commitment to the faculty. And that's what I'm suggesting to you, that if we can at least get this signed off for this year, and we're already open on 2023 for the next academic year. We keep going with that. We keep having these conversations. We take the questions that you want to send us, and we try to get you some answers to those questions. Absolutely. But it would be, I think it would be very unfortunate if the faculty got nothing. And again, I'm not saying it's a big one-time payment, but you know, it is a one-time payment. And in order to go through a ratification process on both sides and get HR the information that payroll needs in order to make sure that this happens on May 15th, we are really at the 11th hour.
So
that clear what I'm saying? That, you know, we want our faculty to have something to show for this year. Not saying that they're happy about it, not saying that they're satisfied, just saying they have.
So I think what would be good, because we do have some people over here, so I think if we could have about 10 minutes to caucus, I can talk to my colleagues and see what feedback I get from them. And then why don't we do that? So I don't know, Charlie, if I don't know how things work here. Are there rooms here or? This is not Zoom, so I don't know.
That's a really great question, actually.
Well, if our team got out,
yeah,
we have another room to go to.
All right, so I'm going to stop the recording.
Yeah.
Okay, and then it's starting, so I'm waiting. There we go. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, but I don't see Chuck.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. All right.
There he is.
Okay. All right. Good. Okay, Chuck, so, you know, it was, we took a long time because a lot of people wanted to speak. Very interesting conversation. I think there's a few points that your team is being disingenuous. They feel that from the beginning, there has been no attempt made to negotiate. We brought the proposal to you. You responded 5 months later, and you made, at that point, you said 0% and 1,000 if you make above 125,000, 1,500 if you make below, and you haven't moved an inch. You didn't even come back and say, okay, let's make it, you know, 2,000 and 3,000 or whatever, or something. which again, for all of us here, because we've seen how the university functions, we've seen the celebrations that are going on, and we're happy. We're very happy that UCF gets to celebrate, and all the advances beyond what you came in your first offer. That means you're really not negotiating, right? Negotiating really means that there is give and take. I mean, you know, bargaining, and again, I come from a background where you bargain, and bargain always means that you meet somewhere in the middle. But you didn't move an inch from your first statement. So basically, no negotiation. We are going to dictate the terms. You either accept it or you don't. And you wouldn't even have offered that if it weren't for the ADIs, okay? So that's where how everyone feels. And the overwhelming, you know, super majority that just rejected. We had a survey done. We had more people respond to that survey than we've ever had in the past. I mean, you know the numbers. And over about 670 some people responded. And basically 90% of them said no. And this is, and you haven't, I mean, the point is that you have not even moved $50 from where you were. So absolutely no change. So that was one. The other one was everybody was very upset by the fact that you would say and make a public statement that essentially the public statement that I made on behalf of my colleagues here is that we were by any way implying that faculty or employees be laid off. I mean, the fact that you would even consider that and make a statement over here about that is just very bothersome. What are you trying to do with that? You know, instead of saying that we haven't bothered, or maybe you won't say we haven't bothered, instead of telling us that, yes, we have done, we've looked for money here and there, basically what you're saying is that to put the blame on us, that if we ask for we came back down, we came from 8% to 4% to basically saying, okay, we will take zero this year, as long as you promise us that there's going to be 3.5% next year. Well, you can come back and say, okay, 3.5 was the minimum that we will negotiate, but then we starting point will be 3.5. You didn't even want to negotiate that. You know, you could have come and said, no, it's not 3.5. We will say 2 or whatever, or 2.5 or so, whatever. I don't know. You could have said something, but you don't want to negotiate even that. So the point is that you want to basically make us look bad, to, you know, declare to the world that we are asking that people be laid off. And that has never been in our minds. You know, we are basically saying that act like other responsible universities are doing, that look in your budget and find ways in which people can be rewarded. We even came down to one-time money. You know, we it has been possible in the past, you've done that you gave us more than what you came with. You know, we got as much as $5,000. I think for people making less than a certain amount, it was even more than $5,000. We were thankful for that. You didn't come back with even one-time money. So my colleagues who were there, their idea was that this is them. They don't want to bargain. They do not have the interest of faculty in their heart. They can keep saying that, but they're really not trying to do anything for us. And so basically, I think, you know, if you think that the timeline is so short, and we talked about March 11th as having a meeting, maybe you go back to the provost and say that everybody is really enraged, and is there something we can do? Can we find one-time money? And we cannot believe that one-time money cannot be found. I mean, it's just, you know, if you're that badly off, you wouldn't be having all the celebrations that you're doing, you know, this just doesn't seem that is really the case. So I think what we should do is that if you really want us to take home something, then come back with a better offer. Come negotiate. Never negotiated. Negotiate now. This is the last time. and maybe we have a special meeting on next week and go from there. But right now, there's no way we could do it.
Okay. All right. And thank you for sharing with us the points that the union members brought up during your caucus. I appreciate you letting us know about those. What I can try to do, out of respect for you and the entire bargaining unit, what I would like to try to do is have an opportunity for me to meet with the provost and see is there something we could do next week. I'll ask again. But I don't remember what the details are. Is it we need 2 days' notice on a meeting? What do we?
Yeah, it's 48 hours.
I thought it was three, but I will.
Well, okay, but
I don't know what. You can always cancel a meeting. You can advertise it, and then you can cancel it.
Well, I guess we could. We could advertise a meeting and then cancel it if there's nothing that we have to offer. Or we could see if we're going to have something and go ahead and schedule it at that point. I will do whichever way you prefer.
Well, I mean, you know, that's fine. I mean, you know, I think if you think that that you know you go and talk to the provost, I mean, we put on our calendar that there will be a meeting, and if nothing happens, then we cancel it.
Okay, we'll go ahead and schedule it for the 11th, and we'll see what happens. And you know, if we aren't going to be able to offer anything, I'll let you know.
Okay. Actually, for the agenda today, I think we did have, you know, there were two things here. They're connected. I think that's it, right? I mean, you're done with your part of the agenda. Is that right?
We had no. Article 10.
Oh, yeah, right.
For 26-27, we wanted to share that with you.
Yeah. But maybe, did you want me to respond to 3 and 12?
We have that on the agenda. Well, we can do it whatever order you want.
Yeah. Well, you can go ahead and present 10. That's fine.
Okay. Thank you. Charlie, you want to put Article 10 up? Okay. Thank you, Charlie. So this is Article 10 that we are proposing for academic year 26-27. The first place I want to point out is lines 22 through 26. What we are proposing here is to better align the rating scales on the annual evaluations with post-tenure review. The post-tenure review are ones that are fixed by the state. We've got to use those. We think it would make sense to use the same ratings on the annual evaluations as well, and hopefully there's that faculty can rely more on the evaluations they get annually and see how they match up with what would be a post-tenure review. So that's what that is just to change from the outstanding, above satisfactory, satisfactory, conditional, unsatisfactory, to exceeds expectations, meets expectations, does not meet expectations, and unsatisfactory. And really, what we're suggesting here is that the above satisfactory and satisfactory would be in the meets expectations, that the exceeds expectations would be like the outstanding folks now. So that's what we're proposing there. There are some other places like lines 31 and 32, 37 and 38, where we're just suggesting changes that are consistent with this alternative rating scale that we are proposing here.
Okay.
And then, Charlie, can you jump to 69 and 83? So there are a couple of places in here where we're making what we think are very minor changes. We think there's an extra S on includes. It should be include. So in lines 69, 83, and 93, we're suggesting those changes. Also in line 86, trying to be consistent in the punctuation. We have a series there where many of the terms we're separating with semicolons wanted to do that consistently. Then line 157. This is just something that occurred to us when we looked at this. We talked about progress toward promotion and our tenure, and we're talking about tenure eligible employees. It just seems to me to make more sense that we say tenure and or promotion, just switch those two words around. And then in starting line 160, we say employees eligible for promotion to professor shall request a CPE and be similarly apprised of their progress toward promotion at least once prior to submitting their dossier. And we have a footnote that we're proposing for the bottom here. In Article 14, there's language there that suggests that the CPE is optional for those contemplating promotion to professor. What we're suggesting is we go back to where it is, would be required that it be done at least once, and I'll explain more why a little bit later on in this article. But we just wanted to, since Article 14 isn't open right now, this footnote for the time being could carry us until we do the full book negotiations and address Article 14 again, if this is in fact something that we settle on. So that's there. Line 186. We missed got a misnumbered statute number, so we're just fixing that. 186. And then 199 and 200. We're adding something here, proposing we add tenured employees applying for promotion in the same year that they are due to participate in post-tenure review will receive a one-time, one-year delay in their post-tenure review submission. So we've had some faculty that have gone through the promotion process and the PTR process at the same time, and I think it's been a burden to them. It's also a lot of work keeping track of those dossiers. What we're hoping to do is really encourage people who are ready to be promoted to go ahead and get promoted. That's why we hope that if they have a CPE and a departmental committee, a chair and a dean are encouraging somebody to apply promotion, let's do that instead of going through the post-tenure review. If somebody's contemplating promotion at the same time they would have gone through post-tenure review, go ahead and submit the promotion dossier. The PTR dossier is due about a month later, typically. If the promotion dossier is submitted, then there can be a one-year delay on the post-tenure review. If the person turns out to get promoted, they don't have to go through post-tenure review the following year because now they go 5 years after they were promoted. So we're trying to do this to encourage people to consider promotion, and that CPE that they do that we talked about a little while ago gives them a good assessment of where their department and their college think they are relative to the promotion criteria. Mm-hmm. And then 213 to 215, this is something that that we want to add by DOG regulation, were to consider and include disciplinary matters in the post-tenure review dossier. And what has become clear is in some cases there are old disciplinary letters that may have sanctions that are still in effect. There's an example that I'm thinking of where someone's participation on grad student committees was limited for an extended time, and it affects what the person is able to do, what they're able to be assigned and what they're able to do. And that information would be helpful to everybody who's evaluating them to see it in the post-tenure review dossier. It isn't used as punitive. It's there to make sure that people understand the context in which the faculty member is able to do their work. So that's one thing we'd like to do. 216 and 217, we're just making some changes there, getting the capitalization right. Similar kinds of things.
Quickly about this thing. If you don't are saying that this shouldn't be punitive, why wouldn't you add that there? I mean, you said that this will be included, but will not have a negative impact.
Well, and it's there for information. What I think is important is that it's clear what the parameters are for a faculty member who's functioning in their job. And if there's somebody who, for example, I gave an example, is
no, I understand. I'm just saying that why don't you add there that this is for information only, that this is not to be for evaluation?
We will consider that.
I mean, right now, some administrator may think of that as punitive. I mean, I can see why, as you're saying, if somebody is not allowed to be in a thesis or something, then that should be, that record should be there, but that should be for information only.
Okay. Thank you for that suggestion. We'll take a look at that. And then 235 and through 237, we got some more capitalization things, very, very minor. 242, we're just updating to the new scale that we've got. And then 246 through 250, again, just using the PIP acronym that's defined in the heading of 10.9, a little bit more throughout that portion of the document. And then in lines 264 to 268, I believe this was language that we had to add because we were fixing a boo-boo. And we actually had an MOU about this. So we're just incorporating the language that we had in the MOU into the CBA, this time in lines 264 through 267, and then parts of 267 and 268, we're deleting because that part was confusing. That was where we had mixed a couple of sentences up together. So we are just trying to correct in 264 through 268 the boo-boo we had in the complete book on the last full book. And those are the suggestions that we have for Article 10. I understand the suggestion that you have made on 213 through 215, Talat. There may be some other things that you want to suggest to us also on Article 10, but that's what we propose for Article 10.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. I think we'll take a look and get back to you, I think, on that. And let's see. So should I do Article 12?
If you'd like, yes.
Yeah, so, okay. So essentially, okay, so I mean, the upshot of it is that, can you see the screen?
Yes.
Okay, so essentially, I mean, I have a few questions, but in 12, I mean, for example, your change up front here regarding appointment, regarding tenure, that's of course, it's a good change. We'll obviously accept that. Over here, we had a question because, but particularly here, because you said something about to be consistent with the regulations. So the question that my bargaining unit wanted to, caucus wanted to ask is, how is it that the regulation is in violation of CBA? I mean,
That's a good question, and I don't think it is in violation of CBA. It's for non-unit employees. So it would just be consistency between unit and non-unit employees.
Okay, so maybe misunderstood, because it says consistency with the regulation. So that was the question. So other than that, we would like 12 to, I mean, if you accept status quo on 12, except for the clarification that you have here, and then, you know, we would accept status quo on Article 3. So that's basically what we are proposing, that status quo on 12, and then we accept status quo on 3.
I want to make sure that I understand. You're saying if we will accept status quo on 12, except for the changes in line 5 that you said?
Yeah.
And Talat, that means you don't really have to present 3 because it's a status quo proposal.
Right.
That's fine.
Right.
That's fine. I didn't want to put you to the trouble.
No. We won't go through that. If you accept this, then we'll go with that. Yeah.
But we will take that under consideration and look at that.
Okay, I think that's it.
Were there any other articles now? Okay.
I think that's it for now.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you all for your time and attention this afternoon. We have decided that we're going to try to do a week from today, same time, get this set up. And I think, Talat, what I had suggested in an email to you yesterday was, if we meet on the 11th, it ought to be about Article 23. And I'd like to say we're going to, you know, restrict ourselves to Article 23. So if we don't have anything to bring, I would let you know.
Sure.
And it's Article 23 for 25, 26.
Yes, Article 23 for 20.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, thank you. Should I stop the recording then?
Okay, I think that's it. Thanks everyone for attending, and thanks for all the input that you gave me. That was very helpful. And thanks, Charlie and Chuck. And I think, let's see, any other,
All right,
I think I saw Greg.